This program was recorded at InterVarsity's Following Christ Conference, held in Chicago, December 27th through 31st, 2008.
Great. Well, welcome. This is a seminar called Writing as a Spiritual Discipline, and I need to get straight if we have an hour or 90 minutes. Does anyone know? We do have 90 minutes?
Okay. We can go an hour. You're in charge.
Okay.
It says
1:33. Thank you. Very good. All right. I wanted to go around the room and introduce ourselves, but I think we're too big to do that, probably. I would like to ask a few of you to say your name and just to say, give me a sense of why you're here. Why are you at, what are your hopes for writing? What are your maybe efforts so far? Do you feel like you have writer's block? What brings you to this seminar? Because I'm really aware of the fantastic competitive seminars going on right now. So I'm grateful that you're here. And so tell me why you're here. Just a few volunteers. Don't be shy. Yes. Very good. Okay, thank you. Someone else? What brings you to this seminar? Yes.
Hi. I'm not a writer, but I think I can express myself better. And I think it has helped me in my life to keep a journal. Just write stuff. Because if I don't write in memory, I might forget. And so if it is written, I just sometimes read what I've written.
Great, great. Go back to the poignant points. It's amazing how forgetful we can be.
Yeah.
But, at least I can be. Anyone else? What brings you here? What are your hopes and interests? Yes, in the back.
Just about slowing down and discovering following direction. That journal was not as regularly as I would like to. And I think by doing that,
great. Very good. Yeah, beginning to see the patterns, maybe the patterns of maybe how God has entered our lives in different ways at different times, how what our choices tend to be, patterns. Anyone else? What brings you here? Yes.
Well, I'm on the brink of writing a dissertation, and I think it'll suck all the joy out of writing.
Oh.
So I just wanted to think differently about writing and think about different ways that it can fill me instead of drain.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, there may be no perfect dissertation, so I usually tell graduate students, get some duct tape. Duct tape yourself to the chair a few hours every morning and write, let the concrete good come out and not the abstract best that we never get to. I don't know, that's at least a start. Yeah. One more? Yes.
I started a book. And I'm just interested in that, the ability to just sit and do it. Right in my mind, I know what I want to write, and I've written most of it. It's just that last part of it, finishing it.
Finishing.
Yeah.
Right. Very good. Very good. Here's the description for the workshop. Given the noise and speed of life, and the needs and expectations of others, and the anxiety that provokes, of course, have we found simple ways to slow down and discover much about our own lives, our spiritual journeys, and callings. When you think about your life goals, what matters to you and why? What are the milestones of your past and present? And what are your future hopes? What is the larger story to which you belong, and how might you know? This seminar will help to cultivate the habit of listening and writing beneath the surface, to live both reflectively and intentionally. And I'll share a bit of narrative just from my own experience of what led me into writing, and from finding God at Harvard and finding God beyond Harvard 10 years later, and a new book called A Faith and Culture Devotional, which 70 of us wrote. I was the daughter of a psychology professor at Ohio, Chicago, and then at Ohio State. My folks divorced when I was 12, and I came to Christ when I was 15, hiding in the church in a church balcony watching a passion play after telling friends I wouldn't go see it, and went three straight nights and fell in love with Jesus. And I thought, I don't think my father and his friends understand who they expelled from the university in their discipline in the 60s and 70s. And I just have had a kind of a lifelong passion of trying to find ways to bridge the academy and the university. The academy and the church, very much like what InterVarsity has been about for so many years. And that led me to a graduate school and to discover that Harvard's motto was In Christi Gloriam, for Christ's glory, in 1636. And then later, Veritas, truth in Christ and the church. And wanting to, our community of Christians there wanted to invite the whole university to sort of explore their biggest questions in relation to the original vision for Harvard, which was Jesus. And that began the first Veritas Forum. And then there have been, it's emerged thanks to kindred spirits in many other universities, has emerged elsewhere. Part of the beginning of that was in terms of the gathering of people at the first Veritas Forum in 1992 was a book. And it wasn't really meant to be a book. It was a collection of testimonies. I remember asking Christian friends if they would write down their stories of how they came to faith. Most of us were not from Christian families. And that took a long time. It took 7 years. And it was often sort of on the back burner, and I didn't focus on it entirely well. But it was really just meant to be a collection of testimonies for our fellowship. It's called Finding God at Harvard, Spiritual Journeys of Thinking Christians. And there are some lesser known and more well-known people in it. But this is a parable I want to share. What happened in the reason it took 7 years is the first, I'd say, two or three drafts of most of the essays that came back to me when I'd say, Professor so-and-so, would you write something for this collection of testimonies of journeys, or a student, would you write? And what came back from people who had lived so too long, done too much time in Cambridge, Massachusetts, was you've been there.
Yeah.
They weren't journeys. I would say they're more like essays. And rarely did I see a first person pronoun, I. It would be more like if one were to. if one were to accommodate the possibility of a transcendent being who was both transcendent and immanent, one would have the following 47 epistemological challenges in doing that. And one's ontology would be stretched in various directions. And I had this pile of paper growing on my desk, and I thought, this is like everything in the Divinity School library. This is like everything. Does Widener Library really need more of this, or does anything need more of this? And so I would go back and say, no, I'm sorry, I must not have explained very well. We want you to tell us about yourself and your own story. And I would get this like blank look from people. But over time, they started to come in differently. And one person would do it, and then I'd show that to some other people. And they'd say, well, if Robert Coles can say that, then I guess I could say what happened to me. And if Elizabeth Dole could say that, then if Alexander Solzhenitsyn said that, then maybe I could say this. And as a community, we began to become honest we began to write beneath the surface, vulnerably, as well as above the surface of our observations of the world or current events or kind of theological, you know, ponderings and so forth. For example, Professor Berman, Harold Berman, is a prodigious scholar in the field of Russian jurisprudence at Harvard Law School. He passed away last year. And I went back to him, fear and trembling. I was a 20-something-year-old. And I said, Professor Berman, would you be willing to, I thank you very much for your essay on Judeo-Christian versus pagan scholarship. It's very interesting. And would you be willing to sort of somehow let that turn towards your own life? And you know, again, blank stare. Well, let me think about it. And what came back a couple weeks later in the mail, before email, envelope, little floppy disk, was a story of Harold Berman, a 20-something-year-old law student in Poland who realized when Hitler's troops were invading Poland that it was possibly the end of the world. And he, that night, escaped on a train for Paris. And on that train, he's describing this in the story, had a vision of Jesus Christ. Now, he was not just a law student, he was a Jewish law student. And he's describing his vision of Jesus Christ, who had marks on his body and yet joy in his face, as if he had borne the suffering of the world and knew its destination, knew its destiny, and it was a good destiny. And he said, my only choice was to carry that burden in my own, on my own soul, or to get on my knees and accept him as my savior. And I got off at Notre Dame and went to the altar and fell on my knees and asked Jesus. This is a Jewish law professor who had never told that story. Another one came back, Glenn Lowry teaching ethics at the Kennedy School of Government to students who are off to positions of leadership, says in his final draft, in my own case, I lived to see my name in the New York Times. I was addicted to drugs and committing adultery. And then a pastor started visiting me, and over time, I was born again. These stories, it was a little bit like, you know, pulling teeth, but once it went extracted, they were beautiful. And one after the next reads that way. Krister Sersing studying to become a Hindu holy, a priest, and crying, going out at night, in the middle of the night in the sugarcane fields on the island of Trinidad, crying out for truth, crying out, knowing there was something so empty in what he was doing and so unsatisfying, and just saying, is there any truth? God, are you real? And then having a revelation of Jesus, one after the next. And so the final draft became something that is I often hear people say, I'm reading this to my father who is dying of cancer. You know, the 40 short essays, one on the historical Jesus and the historicity of the resurrection and how it changed his life, this person's life. For me, here's the irony. 10 years later, maybe some of you will be able to relate to this. First of all, I saw so clearly that of the power of testimony and beneath the surface writing on that kind of first person honesty and vulnerability, I see that in for other people, and I wanted to draw forth their stories, whether it was in this book or in person in Veritas forums. I don't like just talking heads, you know, about ideas. I want people to share more, to be whole. And then it came to be my turn, and Al Shee, who's an editor with IVP, called up and said, well, Kelly, would you write a book that is about sort of founding and the emergence of Veritas forums around the country? And hi, feel free to come up front. Hi, Peter. Hi, Howard. And would you write a book that's sort of a memoir of that? Now, I am a tomboy from Ohio and Wisconsin. I have lots of brothers and uncles, and I broke a lot of bones playing sports. And we didn't cry. We didn't talk about our feelings. And so when I heard memoir, I thought institutional memoir of the Veritas Forum. And I said, well, no, kind of busy, and then my board said, no, this is really what we want you to do for a year. And so then I, you know, didn't have much of a choice, so I started writing. And I created this 400-page conference compendium. And I sent it to my editor, and I was sure it was a great book, and Al called and he said, Kelly, I've got this pile of paper on my desk, and I don't know exactly what it is. I thought you were writing sort of like a memoir. I said, well, I did. You know, it was all about, at Berkeley, we talked about, you know, the clash of civilizations, and at Duke, we talked about body image, and at Stanford, so-and-so said this, and so-and-so said that, and at Texas A&M, you know, Dr. Guinness talked about this, and on and on. And it's a very interesting, you would all probably enjoy that. But not everyone would. And so he said, but I asked four other readers independently to read it, and they all said the same thing. What's that? And he said, well, they all wondered, did she not have a life? What do you mean? I'm just the observer. I'm the distant journalist. I'm the, you know, they, in fact, I think I used third, but I think they talked about this. They, someone said that. He said, well, that's not really what we had in mind. We wanted you to be the reader's guide on a spiritual and intellectual road trip. We wanted you to write first person. Now, why would it be so easy for me to see that for other people but not for myself? Does anybody here relate to that? Why is it hard? Tell me why you think that's so hard. To see it for ourselves. Yes? Yeah. Anyone else? Why is that hard? Why can we write dissertations and books and not, and you know, in these great academic papers, but not explore our own lives? Yeah.
I think I am sometimes afraid of being exposed at the most personal place.
Sure. And some of that's proper, right? We do. We save us.
As an academic.
At ease. Okay.
I'm yeah. Okay there.
Yeah. It's safer.
But underneath is something that make me tremble.
What if you're only writing for yourself? Can you do that?
Better.
It's easier. Better. Okay. Does anyone have a hard time even writing for themselves? Oh.
I do, because okay. I just wonder, like, if I really say everything that I think, like, I'm sure there's stuff that will be offensive to people that people think is stupid. And one of my biggest concerns would be like, what if somebody found this and they actually found this?
Yeah, for real. What if they put it on the web?
Yeah.
Yeah, so why even say it? And I mean, there, that's a real question. And there is that space that I want to reserve for the Lord and not for anyone else. And I think that's proper. So I don't like tell-all books. They make me really nervous. But then if I'm writing for myself as a spiritual discipline, I might be able to learn a little bit of my own story. And or rather, the Lord might, and through that time and space on the page, help me understand my own past, present, and future hope, future direction. Peter.
I want to ask a question. Like, one of the things that concerns me, too, is like, especially like writing about negative experiences, is like, sometimes I feel like, is this like really Christian? Like, let's say I have a really negative thought. Should I be writing about kind of why I feel down, or should I be like redirecting my efforts towards thinking about like what kinds of scriptures can I meditate on to get myself out of this place? Mm-hmm. So sometimes I don't want to record the negative feelings because I think that I would be focusing in the wrong direction.
But isn't it interesting that David did do that? You know, Lord, dash your enemies upon the rocks. I mean, and conquer my foes and get this guy off my back. And at the same time, help and praise you all in the same breath. Really, I don't know. I think it's wrong to vilify someone because we're all in a great battle, and that was one of my issues too. Yes, one more comment.
Okay. Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa.
How her struggles kind of came out.
Yeah.
You know, and something like
we all go through our own certain struggles, and unless we, you know, talk about them, no one's going to know about them. And there have been other people that have experienced the same hurt and the same pain. And then, you know, once you kind of realize that, it's easier to kind of bridge that gap and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you. Well, what happened for me, just to kind of move this along, and I want to spend quite a bit of time giving you time to write, is I went away to a farm in southern Ohio, and for about 4 days, and finally, as this deadline was approaching, the final deadline for this book, Finding God Beyond Harvard, The Quest for Veritas, and I prayed about it. I was lying in a hammock and looking at this beautiful autumn blue sky. And I just finally had the courage to open the feedback of readers, those four independent readers, who really did all say that pretty much the same thing. And I said, Lord, what am I going to do with this? And what I sensed, not audibly, but sensed him saying was, it has to go through the cabin. And to me, I understood that that meant the problem of pain. And it happened to be my pain. And the cabin was a place on the north shore of Boston where I ran away for 3 years from Cambridge and would go in and into Cambridge occasionally or travel for Veritas to other universities occasionally. But I basically crashed for 3 years from about 1990. 2001, and what had happened was in my 10 years in Cambridge, I had had a very close relationship with a graduate student in physics at MIT, and who is a really remarkable person, which of course is why it always hurts so much when it doesn't work out right, and we were in this great circle of friends, and sort of begun planning a life together in some ways, and we thought we would be married. And we were both really distracted. He had struggles in his graduate program, and I was traveling a lot with the Veritas Forum. And one thing after the next, we broke up. And I remember being at Stanford and Berkeley for a month, coming back and driving to his to my house, and thinking that I saw his car in the driveway, when in fact it was actually in the driveway of one of my best friends, who was my next-door neighbor, who he married a couple, about a year later. And for me, that was Jeb. I was 30-something years old, and it was really devastating. And I went to the North, and again, I'm a tomboy, I like hearing myself saying these things, like, why am I telling these people this? I went to Liv, Bruce Herman, who's here, Bruce and Meg found this cool cabin, pine cabin up on the North Shore in Essex, Massachusetts, near Gordon Conwell, where I was part-time attending. And that became sort of a sacred time for me, those 3 years. And the Lord was saying, you have to include that in the story. And it's not going to be a conference compendium. It's going to be what I've done in your life, Kelly, and why the big questions really matter, and why the gospel matters on the far side of pain and complexity, not just for you, but for every person. That's why Veritas is important. That's why Veritas isn't abstract, but a person, Jesus. And for all of these questions, we have Jesus. So I sort of started to get it. And one of the reasons I couldn't see it before is I didn't think my own life was worth talking about. I mean, it was just, I was the organizer, you know. I didn't see the legitimacy or even the pattern in my own story, the golden thread. I didn't see any of it until I started writing it. So now, again, change the pronoun, and the book opens up and, unable to sleep against the boxes marked biohazard, I sat in the plane's jump seat, looked through the cockpit window at the stars and moon, and wondered, what in the world am I doing on this cargo jet in the middle of a cold winter night? I was hitching a ride on a friend's plane, the AirNet Express. Um, I wrote a journal entry and lay back against the boxes of canceled checks, Red Cross blood, and mystery boxes with the orange stickers. I was the cargo with the yellow earplugs and blue sleeping bag. And frankly, I missed Rob, my family, friends, and books by the fire. And I begin remembering why I'm on this plane. This is a few years into the Veritas Forum starting and emerging around the country. As a part-time college chaplain at Hartford, these planes would go all night in the middle of the night, and I'd end up in Palo Alto or Chicago or Denver or someplace. I believed, despite the university's long bout with amnesia, that the purpose of the modern university was the pursuit of truth, Veritas. But I heard the postmodern questions of the times. Whose truth? What good is truth? Who cares? But then I wondered, do we just accept a loss of bearings of true north? Again, I'm pondering. I'm allowing myself to speak beneath the surface. And that, for me, was finding a voice that came out, that flowed out so easily throughout the book, that would now reads like a novel, that includes the old boyfriend and the sense of betrayal or hurt, pain, even though I was very much at fault, and includes that. But just as a kind of one of the threads through the book that I think connects to the real disappointment of real people. And I think the Lord told me at some point, it's okay to include that if you don't vilify anyone, which I didn't at all. And also just enough to not identify that person, but to connect to the reader's equivalent of that story. And it's maybe okay to write from a place not of open wounds, but of scars that God have healed. And I had experienced that healing. And so it just kind of, yes, the book explores the gospel at many angles, astrophysics, history, philosophy, archaeology, botany, so forth, humanities, the arts, but it also explores the gospel at various depths too, and that's what that kind of beneath the surface writing allows. I also didn't want God to look bad. That was one of my reasons for not doing it, because in that cabin, it was 1998, and Christianity Today had just named me one of the up-and-coming evangelical leaders in America. And the Veritas Forum was in 40-some universities. Finding God at Harvard was a Boston Globe bestseller. And the leader, founder of all of that was hiding in the woods near the ocean, wondering if God existed. And so I didn't want God to look bad. 10 years later, when asked to write about all that, I thought, you know, because of my thoughts were, Lord, if this is how you treat your friends, how do you treat your enemies? And I was mad, and I was bitter. So the thought of writing about that was not very appealing at multiple levels. And how is writing a spiritual discipline? Well, if we assume an author of life, if we believe there is an author who speaks the universe into existence, who speaks us into existence and into meaning, writing is a way of making space, of allowing yourself blank pages, and you're going to take the time, you know, in the ink, the heart, to fill those pages. It's a way of beginning to discover our own story and what the patterns in the years and decades of our lives are, and how they emerge, and how our story might fit into the larger creation, fall, redemption epic. It's also a way of cultivating the capacity to listen, both listen to the Lord, listen to our own lives. And I think people who cultivate, you know, that time to write are also usually making time to read and to care about other people's stories as well. So we begin to be people who really start paying attention more. You know, maybe we turn our cell phones off and our iPods off, and maybe we sit with silence more, and maybe we begin to appreciate that in the silence is the fullness. The noise is the emptiness. I think academically also, we those of us who are cultivating that space for God are also bringing more to our academic disciplines. We're bringing a greater depth and perhaps even a greater breadth because we're reading across disciplinary lines. And I think the world needs a lot more wisdom than information right now. So excellence is another reason, thoughtfulness, cultivating the capacity of thoughtfulness. It also helps me discover what I'm avoiding and why. Had I not been asked to write about it, I would never have understood why I was still avoiding certain memories. And what does it mean that I'm avoiding certain years of my life or certain memories? Might that mean that that's exactly where God wants to start healing us? And why would that be good? Well, we could look back with gratitude, sense the Lord's presence in those times, and I think mercy and forgiveness opens up our future as well, because bitterness shrinks us. Bitterness is like Mary Kate was saying, it helps us throw the fear switch and not the love switch, you know, if you heard her talk. But mercy opens up our future. It helps us to live forwardly. What I'd like you to do is take out a piece of paper and a pen, a pencil. If anyone needs one, you can put your hand up. If I had a chalkboard, I'd write it out. But. And on the left side, there's a little grid we're making. So on the left side, going down, I'd like you to write the following words. I'll walk around. Place. Word place. Underneath that, the word family. Make sort of 1-inch square, 1-inch, you know, column, rows. The word cultural moments. Words cultural moments. Next, work. Next, significant memories. And then under that, put bullet point, favorites, question mark, favorites. And then under that, put bullet point, avoiding. Significant memories, what are your favorites and what are you avoiding? By favorites, I mean, if I were to ask you to bring 2 or 3 photographs or sketches of moments in your life, that you would want to think would just rise to the surface, what would you show us? Well, it would be this. That what would you want to most write about? What feels most symbolic, most emblematic, most poignant to you? What moments in your life? That's a tough question, because we have many. Under that, golden thread. Do you know what I mean by golden thread? Is there a pattern? Is there a presence that just keeps following you through your life? Keeps you in the dark and you have something to hold on to get you the next step? What would that be? What is the golden thread that maybe has found you? And then underneath that, the Lord, put the Lord. Okay, and then at the top, about 2 inches in, we're going to go across and just put, this is just a simple timeline. So 0 to 10, 11 to 20, 21 to 30. Some of you stopped there. 31 to 40, 32 to 40, 43 to 40. I have to keep going. 41 to 50. Fill in 50 plus. And then you're going to, at the end of that, put the future.
question mark with an arrow going off to the future. Okay, and then draw some lines like a grid. And what I'd like you to do is, and don't feel you have to fill in every box. Am I being clear? Is this making sense? Don't fill in every box if you don't want to, but let's take 10 minutes and quickly sketch out. We're going to do like a chart of how we might start thinking about writing our lives as a spiritual discipline. And then we're going to circle one or two things and jot a paragraph. I think the secret of getting started as a writer is to write 10 minutes a day and write badly. Just write badly. And then we're going to maybe pick one thing and actually write it. Okay? So take 10 minutes, work on your craft. Yes, Tim?
What's a cultural moment?
Yeah. Someone actually chose that as one of the more poignant. Someone said the fall of the Berlin Wall. They were there. 9/11. A cultural moment. Maybe it's an innovation. I saw the television when so-and-so went to the moon, you know. That could be a moment, an innovation, an invention, a discovery, and a significant event that took place culturally. For some reason, that impacted you personally. But that's above the surface. I also want, in the memories, the golden thread of the Lord, for you to start, you know, for you to jot things down in terms of what's beneath the surface of your life. Let's take 10 minutes and do this.
But you don't have to write. We're just graphing. You know, you don't have to write your feelings about that. This just gives you a sense of you're going across in terms of where you've lived. That's your place. Born in Kansas, grew up in Chicago and Ohio, and then that's just sort of a timeline of your life. And then you could write significant things about your family. My brother was born. My mom passed away. Beneath that. That's just kind of getting that information on the page, but that's not necessarily what you're going to write about. You might not. Feel free to add a category to the left-hand side, too, if you'd like. These are milestones. These aren't, this is not meant to be exhaustive. You might add a category that's like my choices, and get a sense of how much of your life you have chosen versus maybe what was chosen for you, or what you chose versus sort of how you felt called. Or do you feel things happened to you, or that you intentionally walked in a certain direction? What are the patterns that might be emerging? Are there some? You might write a category at the bottom called hopes. What were your hopes when you were a child? In your 20s, in your 30s. What are your future hopes? What would you like to be able to write in the boxes under the decades, you know, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, and so on? In other words, what's missing that you would very much like to be present? And are those things you're asking the Lord for? Prayer is a spiritual discipline. This can help us, direct us in how to pray. Now, if you're ready to circle, say one thing that kind of cries out to you, this, I want to be further explored as a poignant moment or event or feeling. Circle that. Start a new page. Maybe make a few branches on that circle. Who else was involved in that? A friend, a parent, sibling, a teacher? Why was that so poignant for you? And begin to write your feelings about what you circled. If you have a separate page, or the same page, either one, as long as it's off to itself. Yes?
One of the squares?
Yeah, one of the squares, right. Circle that. Begin to write about something that is, maybe God is speaking to you about a place he wants to, where he wants to show you something. Why that memory was so important. Maybe it's something you're in the avoiding column. He wants to walk you through. Why did it hurt so much? Where is the Lord in that? Does any scripture come to mind that has bearing on that?